and NPR.
From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Well, tonight we have a scoop on which local notable is going to the biggest hot dog eating contest in the world at Nathan's in Coney Island. Camille O'Brien, returning to her Brooklyn roots, one of 10 women competing in the big contest on Friday. She joins us in studio to talk all about it in the second half of the program. Also, we continue our coverage of federal funding cuts hitting home in our area, this time talking about the impacts of the Hurleyville Arts Center. Radio Catskills' Genevieve Hartnett talks to Lourdesa Hunt coming up in a moment. We also do have some news from around New York State, including the ratcheting up of beach safety after a Sullivan County woman was bitten by a shark in Long Island. But first, leaders in Sullivan County are speaking out forcefully against recent anti-Semitic incidents targeting Orthodox Jewish pedestrians in the towns of Woodburn and South Fallsburg. According to the reports, eggs were thrown at multiple individuals walking along Route 42 on Sunday, prompting an ongoing investigation by the town of Fallsburg Police Department. While no injuries were reported, at least one incident took place in front of a synagogue, and all of the targets were visibly Orthodox Jewish residents or visitors. The Sullivan County Legislature, along with the Executive Director of the County's Human Rights Commission, joined the newly formed Sullivan County Coalition Against Antisemitism in condemning these attacks. In a statement, Legislative Chair Nadia Raj said, quote, "These assaults were clearly anti-Semitic in nature, inexcusable in every way, and instilled fear in the Orthodox Jewish community, whom we are proud to call neighbors. This legislature will not minimize nor stand for such displays of hate in Sullivan County, and we fully support local law enforcement's efforts to expose and prosecute the perpetrators." End quote from Nadia Raj. Ramon Wilson, Executive Director of Sullivan County Human Rights Commission, wrote to Coalition Chair and Local Attorney Jacob Billig, saying, quote, "No one in our community should live in fear or be subjected to violence and harassment based on their faith. These violations of human dignity are wholly incompatible with the values we uphold as county and as a commission committed to justice, equality, and respect for all." End quote from Ramon Wilson. Sullivan County Coalition Against Antisemitism launched earlier this year and was formed in response to growing concerns about bias and harassment in the region. Anyone with information about these incidents is urged to contact the Town of Fallsburg Police Department. In New York State news, a judge says it's time to reinstate the policy that prisons put on hold during the Wildcat strikes at the beginning of the year. The state judge is ordering prisons to comply with state law and resume the policy that limits the use of solitary confinement. Jung Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network has more. Thank you, Jung Yoon. According to News 12 Hudson Valley, a 20-year-old woman from Sullivan County sustained minor injuries after being bitten on the left leg and foot while swimming at Jones Beach State Park last Wednesday. Officials believe the incident was likely caused by a juvenile sand tiger shark. The woman was transported to Nassau County University Medical Center for treatment. Authorities suspect the shark was drawn close to shore by fish activity nearby. Following the incident, swimming was suspended for several hours while New York State Police and lifeguards conducted aerial and on-the-water surveillance to ensure the area was safe before reopening it to the public. In response, Governor Kathy Hochul announced enhanced surveillance measures at Long Island State Park beaches that include an increase to 28 patrol drones across beach locations, 8 newly trained drone operators for a total of 48 among staff, and a specialized night-capable enterprise drone with thermal imaging and flotation drop capability assigned to state park police. Governor Hochul said in a statement, quote, "We are continuing to strengthen our shark surveillance capabilities and safety tactics at these beaches to help protect these treasured summertime traditions," end quote from the governor. Long Island officials say extra patrols will be on the lookout for sharks as well as for boating safety violations this holiday weekend. Bruce Blakeman is Nassau County Executive.
We will have our police out, and they will be strictly enforcing boating while under the influence. Do not do that. Also, if you are in any kind of motorized boat or wave runner, just remember to adhere to all of the rules on the water, especially the speed in the inlets.
Those are things to keep in mind if you're swimming near the ocean or its inlets this weekend. If you happen to be in or around some of the inland water a little bit closer to our geographic listening area, there are other precautions you should take. Specifically, the National Park Service is reminding folks that if you're recreating in, on, or around the scenic Delaware River, you should have a life jacket and it should fit properly. The river can be deceptive and dangerous. On average, 2 people drown every year on the Upper Delaware River. So don't overestimate your swimming abilities. Experienced and strong swimmers have drowned in the river in the past, as well as inexperienced swimmers. Those in a boat are also recommended to wear a life jacket. Wearing a life jacket and wearing it correctly is the safest thing you can do while on or in the river. Life jackets should be in good condition, and they should fit snugly to the person so that the life jacket can't slide over somebody's head when it's pulled upon. And now we have local arts and culture news. As arts funding faces cutbacks across the country, local organizations in Sullivan County, like the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, or HPAC, are speaking out about what's at stake. Lourdesa Hunt, Director of Development at HPAC, joined other arts leaders in the Catskills, calling on state and regional funders to move with urgency towards funding the arts. Hunt spoke directly to the Sullivan County Legislature recently to recognize the vital role that arts play in preserving cultural heritage, boosting tourism, and fostering inclusive community spaces. And afterward, Hunt joined Radio Catskills' Genevieve Hartnett here in our studios.
At the legislative meeting a couple weeks ago, you spoke about how Sullivan County is not moving fast enough to address the decrease in federal funding towards arts organizations. How does that specifically impact the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and how does that change your operations? What does that look like?
Well, we are at a standpoint in our operations where it is pay employees or put out programming for the community. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard spot to be in, because so much of what we pride ourselves on there is to be able to put this accessible programming out for the community. Arts and culture isn't always about just going to a fully formed play or a fully formed musical or a performance. It's often about putting that in someone's hands and creating that spark at a smaller level. So it's not something that we want to do, and we are making our way through. But to your point, there are a lot of national grants that are no longer available to arts organizations. The NEA, they're pulling those grants, things that have been awarded or, you know, contract, they're pulling those away. Yeah. Just simply based on if your programming promotes diversity, equity, and inclusion, then you're no longer applicable for those funds. And then on top of that, so there is that kind of attack on that community or that mission. If you're arts and organization, many arts organizations, that is the mission, because as artists, that's where we found our home. We create art to address those needs, and we celebrate them there. And that's how it's always been historically. It's just kind of been that platform, that mouthpiece, that voice for the underserved. So combine that also with just general federal uncertainty that is then trickling down into your state and then into your county and into your towns and villages.
How much prior to the Trump administration returning to D.C., I mean, how much did the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center rely on grants from the National Endowment of the Arts?
I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was a pretty large chunk prior to me coming on. And I am especially challenged as I came into the organization just in August. I was ready to hit the ground running with all of these avenues and platforms that suddenly come November, come January, all those pedestals were kind of taken away.
A lot of people assume that arts organizations in states like New York that have robust fine and performing arts scenes, that they'll be fine. But can you share some of the reality of running a performing arts center in a more rural area like Sullivan County? And, you know, especially now, what does that look like?
Oh, my. Well, the reality of running a performing arts center in general is that artists deserve to be paid. Our big push is always to make sure that we can pay those artists and make sure that they are paid. But to your point, it's very difficult in a rural landscape to create, if you're making a ticketed event, to make sure that that ticket price is enough to keep your doors open, but also pay those artists that wage that they deserve creating the pieces that they create. It's also a challenge in finding the programming that's going to speak to a diverse community, because there are so many different groups in what they might want to see or what they might want to experience. So it's really kind of a balancing act to make sure that you are, you know, putting out impactful programming while also putting out something that reaches to the community to bring them in. So it's always kind of a balancing act. The struggle with funding, especially in our rural community, is that, and it's the reason that we push so hard for support, not just in grant funding from our community partners like the Visitors Association and the legislature, is that we pride ourselves on making sure that our programming is as low cost or free wherever possible to ensure that even in an economic downturn, that the arts don't become something that is no longer accessible for everyone. There's no need to hide it from the community that we thrive because you support us. And we're so thankful for every one of our donors, every one of our guests who come and visit or take part in our programs. We are thankful for each and every one of you.
The performing arts are integral to the history of and attraction to the Catskills in Sullivan County. In your opinion, having worked with the Visitors Association and now with the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, do you feel like the area's funding and tourism focus has drifted away from fostering its cultural legacy? Do you feel like there could be more attention to it?
I actually do think that there should be more focus on it at a more granular level. So there is a big focus on larger venues, but there are so many smaller groups and venues and things that are coming up. And being that our landscape once was that big, diverse, you know, every resort had its own entertainment, every resort had its own section. Those communities are really trying to rebuild on that now. And it feels like the landscape of Sullivan County, while they are pushing the bigger venues, a lot of it is really focusing on wellness versus arts and culture. And I think it's a big mistake. That's what people came here for. And wellness was a big part of it, but a lot of it was the entertainment that was offered. And we had some big entertainers come through here. I know that they are also trying to walk that fine line of finding what will draw people to the area. But we need to decide what's going to make people stay in the area or want to come back to the area. And I think arts and culture is what's going to do that.
Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, it has a very wide and diverse performance lineup. As we had discussed, the Trump administration has made it very clear that they will be eliminating funding for projects in the arts that fall outside of their priorities. Has your organization been directly impacted by these guidelines, whether at the federal, state, or local level?
Well, there are federal programs that we can no longer apply for unless we were to, you know, do some reconfiguration of our mission, which is directly related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's not something that we're willing to do. Thankfully, New York State does have a very robust grant programs. Those are now opening up again. So we were able to apply for those. Even at county levels, you know, there's some funding within the county that has been, you know, frozen for the time being for new applicants, which of course, there, with the uncertainty, there's going to be a lot of new applicants because those avenues have closed. I will say our legislators have been really supportive in listening to my concerns. The Visitors Association was very supportive in listening to my concerns as I voiced them at the legislature and urged them to not forget that Sullivan County is built on small business, and small business won't survive without support, and visitors won't come here without things to do.
Is there anything that you would like to let people know that we didn't discuss in the interview today, or would you like to talk about any events at Hurleyville Performing Arts Center that are upcoming?
One of the big things, and again, the reason for our push is our programming space. We have outgrown our programming space. So one of the things that we have taken on this year, it's a very big venture, is we are restoring the historic ONW Luzon Station that is in Hurleyville. It's directly adjacent to the Performing Arts Center. It has been out of use since 1957 when the railroad kind of left. It's been owned by the same family who has generously allowed us to acquire the space, and we will be renovating it to be as historically accurate as it can be, but to be another programming space and event space for the community so that we can hold concurrent programming. So we are accepting donations on that. We are doing a capital campaign. We just launched it. We will be installing a community mural composed of over 500 tiles collectively, but there are 350 4x4 tiles that you can purchase on our website, and you will get your own custom paint palette to fit into that master mural. You can paint whatever you like. You do not need to be an artist. You can put a peace sign. You can sign your name as long as it's in the colors, which is such a beautiful tribute to the diverse landscape that we have, because it will come together to form one picture. And at the end of the day, all of these communities of our county come together to make the landscape that we have. And next month, we will have our Sullivan County Music Festival, and that's happening on July 19th from 12 to 4.
Thank you so, so much for joining us. And we've been talking with Lourdesa Hunt. She is the Director of Development at Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Genevieve, for that report. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Camille O'Brien's bringing some hot dog heat back home for the 4th of July. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
There's concern that inevitably when either Democrats control Congress again or even just Republicans, and they're trying to make their own fiscal math work to accomplish whatever big policy priority they have, they'll just resort to this accounting gimmick, and that could just blow out the debt forever.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we're all about two great summer traditions: the cookout and getting out of the car on a road trip to get a snack in a gas station. We've got the chefs behind LA's beloved restaurant Kismet and photojournalist and gas station aficionado, Kate Medley. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
It's Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Friday is Independence Day, and it means a lot of things to a lot of people, but to folks anywhere near Surf Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, it means one thing: hot dogs. That's where Nathan's Famous is in Coney Island, and that's where Camille O'Brien will be on Friday for the most famous eating competition in the world. She joined me here in studio last week to talk all about it. Camille O'Brien, welcome back to our studios here at Radio Catskill.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It's always great to be here.
So congratulations, I should say, as well, for winning a place in the most famous eating contest in America, I think.
They call it the Super Bowl of eating.
You're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't even believe it.
How many people are you going to be competing against? Do you know?
I'll be against 9 other women. There's 10 men and 10 women. And actually, the hot dog eating contest is... So Major League Eating, there's a whole circuit for competitive eating throughout the country and actually throughout the world. Nathan's is one of the last contests that separates men and women.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, which there are some pretty good professional women that can win full events, but a lot of times they're outshined by their male counterparts. So there's not as many female competitors.
Okay, so do you think this is still providing some an opportunity for up-and-comers like you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. How many of these contests did you go to before this one?
So this is actually my first one with hot dogs, and I've been in other eating contests. But funny enough, my whole family is from South Brooklyn. So one of my earliest memories is being at Nathan's on Coney Island in the summer and eating French fries with the little red fork they used to have.
Yeah.
So I've heard about this contest since I was little, and we watched every 4th of July. And I got interested in other eating contests because it always tickled me so much to watch the 4th of July hot dog eating contest. So to have the opportunity, I actually signed up months ago for the qualifier.
How did you find out about the qualifier? Like, what led you to realize, okay, well, why don't I try it here?
So I actually do look at the Major League Eating website every so often to see what events are coming up. Being in the Buffalo Wing Eating Contest last year in Buffalo, I was in the amateur contest. And, you know, every time I apply to these contests, I always say that this could be my opportunity to break in the big leagues. And I'll write like a little essay about it. And this actually worked. I actually signed a contract yesterday with Major League Eating. So technically, I'm a professional eater now.
Wow. Wow. You did break into the big leagues with this qualifying win.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a little bit of luck. Because some of the other qualifiers, women won with 8, so I beat them. But there was a couple qualifiers that women had 30, 25, where, you know, I would have been 4th, 5th place.
Yeah.
But, you know, luck of the draw, I went to this one, and I ate 8.5 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Second place ate 8, and third place ate 7.5. But only the winner gets a seat at the big show.
We're recording this before it airs, you know, and at this point you got maybe like a week and a half before, yeah. You got like 10 days before the 4th of July. What are you doing? What can you do to prepare?
Okay. So I learned a few lessons, on the first, the qualifier. So some people have been training for this for months and years. I had a couple weeks. Because hot dogs are one of the things people choke on the most, it's actually an EMS like stat. People choke on hot dogs. I was actually afraid to practice alone, but you know, being a volunteer firefighter, I know some people in the service that I felt safe doing the Heimlich. So I did have a practice the week before.
So you had somebody there to spot you. You had somebody there on hand in case, God forbid, something goes wrong.
Absolutely. And in that practice, I ate 7.5. So, you know, they actually filmed me and gave me some pointers. So going in, if I had ate 7.5, I wouldn't have won. So that practice made all the difference. So I've been eating a lot of watermelon to create more space in my stomach. The hardest part is going the full 10 minutes and going full speed the full 10 minutes. You start to slow down. So I've been eating a lot of watermelon and salad to kind of expand my stomach. And I'm going to do 2 more practices, tomorrow night, before it's work night at my fire department, and a few of the guys I trust to Heimlich me and save me if I am to choke. So, I'm going to set up some hot dogs and do a practice then. People always ask about the aftermath. It does take a couple days for digestion to work its magic. So, we are recording this on a Wednesday. So I'll be practicing Thursday. Then I'll be practicing Monday, and then I'll just be eating water. I plan on buying quite a few watermelons and just expanding my stomach. And then the day before the 4th of July, I won't eat at all. Yeah, so once I have that space and capacity, I want to make sure it's emptied out. Funny enough, there's a weigh-in at Hudson Yards the day before. So all the competitive eaters will go down there. They'll get weighed in. It's a big press conference. Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to get too technical here, but like, you know, I don't follow many sports, but I grew up watching boxing. And in that case, a weigh-in makes sense to me because there's lots of different weight classes. What's the point of a weigh-in for the hot dog eating contest?
I honestly think it's just a big promotion.
Okay. All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't. I'm like, wait, are you going to get broken up into weight class or you got the welterweight hot dog eating champ, you know?
No. But I am going to take the opportunity, since it is a promotional thing, I'm hoping to wear some of my fire department bunker gear and promote volunteer firefighting. So, you know, if I get an opportunity at a stage, I'm hopefully going to use it for something good.
You know, and you're playing to the home crowd, which is literally home crowd for you. And we know, you know, New Yorkers upstate and down like their emergency responders. So, you know, that's it's good both ways. Good promotion for you and good promotion for volunteer firefighters.
The whole fire and EMS community has been so supportive to help me practice and get me there. And, you know, anything I could do to support more people volunteering. And that's something we've talked about that before, that there's so many jobs in fire and EMS. You don't necessarily need to be running into a burning building to volunteer your time and help local departments.
It's cool. I just want to go back to what you're saying. I think the coolest aspect of all of this is the fact that you are literally, people say you can't go home again. You're going home again as a qualifier to participate in a Super Bowl level eating competition. You are going home again. And just that image of sitting, I mean, anybody that's been there, you know, at any time of the year knows Nathan's there on the boardwalk on Coney Island and the counters around the place and, yep. and the food and the fries and all that. And so what does this mean to be coming full circle like that?
It means, I think, way more than a lot of people know to me. Having lost both my parents, it's such a throwback to my family and the memories I have there. And, you know, I've actually gone with friends to watch the hot dog eating contest live before. So it's also a huge fangirl thing that I can't even believe it. These are like when people are fans of athletes and celebrities. I've been watching so many of these competitive eaters for years. And it's like it's a childhood dream come true. I'm not even going to lie.
You've got a lot of other things to worry about when you're there. Are you going to get to enjoy Coney Island like you would if you were just, you know, stopping by Nathan's for a hot dog and not for a contest? You can get to do anything else while you're there?
I mean, we could, but I learned this lesson the hard way in Hershey Park. At the qualifier, I ate the hot dogs. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I'll just need an hour to walk it off and digest. And then we could go do some things. And, you know, it was 90 degrees out. And the energy it takes from your whole body to digest that much food. Luckily I rode one roller coaster before the contest.
If you want to ride the Cyclone, you got to do it before.
Before. There's no chance after. Yeah. I had high hopes, but I had to get out of there.
And, you know, people are like, not whether you win or lose, it's the game. And I know there's a lot of people in sports that don't believe that. But in this case, at least you still get the hot dogs.
Right. Yeah, that's the bonus of any eating competition. You still get the food. It's a free lunch, which is great.
All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck or break a leg, whatever you're supposed to say.
Thank you so much.
Before a hot dog contest. Yeah. But this is an all-American thing. So you're the hometown hero for us here upstate as well as the folks back home downstate.
I appreciate all the support. And, you know, I never thought this was the way I was going to get on ESPN, but here we go.
That's it for the Local Edition. I've been your host, Jason Dole. I'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk to Philip Pantuso of the Times Union. Before then, I'll remind you, at any moment, you can go to wjffradio.org and support this radio station. As we head into our summer fun drive, we will be looking for your support, and we will be needing your support more than we ever had before. So do what you can to help us out, but please also spread the word. Let folks know we've got a summer fun drive. And they can start giving now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks so much. The Daily is next. This is Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Chester's, a working art studio and gallery by the Brook in Berryville, offering a creative escape for individuals and groups. Events, info, gallery rental pop-ups, and classes at chesterscreative.com. And from The Overlook, a new nonprofit newsroom covering Woodstock, Saugerties, Hunter, Hurley, Olive, and Shandaken. News, culture, community, and more at theoverlooknews.com. And from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
On the TED Radio Hour, online shopper Aparna Mehta used to get a lot of packages delivered to her door.
Oh, per week? 12, 15?
Whoa!
Sorry, but I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. Look, the store is making it possible for me to order as many as I want and return back what I don't want.
Shopping and the state of fashion. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
NPR and this station don't just report the news, we explain what it means for you. Because the news is personal, and your support is essential. Donate to this station today, and thank you.
Go to wjffradio.org.
I'm Sonia Hedlund. Join me Saturday morning for Ballads and Banjos. It's a diverse selection of folk music from some of my favorite singer-songwriters. Ballads and Banjos, Saturday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill. WJ.